There was a second silence, and then a tremendous hullabaloo. The hissing started again, with cries of "Fraud!" and "Imposter!" The applause began and sputtered out, and angry catcalls and boos sounded from the gallery. In a moment the whole mood of the theatre had changed. Taking their cup from Ranelagh and his toadies, they began to howl her down. A few coins clattered on the stage. The conductor, gaping at the audience with his mouth open, suddenly flung down his baton and stamped out. And then the whole place was in a frenzy, stamping and calling for their money back and shouting to her angrily to get back to the bogs of Donegal. She was standing blazing with fury, and when she moved towards our box, some of the chaps scrambled back to get out of harm's way. She stood a moment, her bosom heaving, her eyes sweeping the box. Oh, yes, she recognized me, all right. And when she began to curse at us, I think it was me as much as Ranelagh as she was getting at. Unfortunately, she swore in English, and the mob caught it and yelled louder than ever. Then she dashed down the bouquet she was holding, stamped on it, kicked it into the orchestra, and with one last damnation in our direction, ran from the stage as the curtain fell. I must say I was delighted. I hadn't thought it could go off so well. As we crowded out of the place, the barber, of course, was entirely forgotten to the sensation, I came up to Ranelagh's elbow and congratulated him. I couldn't have paid her out so splendidly myself, and I told him so. He gave me a cold nod and sailed off, the snobbish bastard. But I wasn't in a mood to mind too much. That was me, quits with Mistress Lola for her brickbats and insults, and I went home in high good humour. She was finished on the London stage, of course. Lumley dismissed her, and although one or two attempts were made to present her at other theatres, the damage was done. All sorts of people now seem to remember her as Mrs. James, and although she wrote a letter of denial to the press, no one believed it. A few weeks later she had disappeared, and that, thought I, was the end of Lola Montez, so far as I was concerned, and good riddance. A brilliant bedmate, I don't deny, in her way, and even now the picture of her kneeling naked among the bedclothes can set me itching. But I never liked her particularly, and was glad to see her sent packing. But it wasn't the end of her, by any means, although it was some years before I saw her again, in circumstances that I couldn't have dreamed of. One heard of her from time to time through the papers. And always it was sensational news. She seemed to have a genius for thrusting herself into high places and creating scandal. First, there was a report of her horsewhipping a policeman in Berlin. Next, she was dancing on the tables during a civic banquet in Bonn, to the outrage of Prince Albert and our Queen, who were on a state visit at the time. Then she was performing in Paris, and when the audience didn't take to her, she stripped off her garters and drawers and flung them at the gallery. She started a riot in the streets of Warsaw, and when they tried to arrest her, she held the peelers off with pistols. And, of course, there were scores of lovers, most of them highly placed. The Viceroy of Poland, the Tsar of Russia, although I doubt if that's true, and Liszt, the musician. She took up with him two or three times, and once to get rid of her, he locked her in a hotel room and sneaked out by the back door. I met him later on, by the way, and we discussed the lovely Lola and found ourselves much in agreement. Like me, he admired her as a tumble, but found her all too overpowering. "She is a consuming fire," he told me, shaking his white head ruefully, "and I've been scorched, oh, so often." I sympathized. She had urged me on in lovemaking with a hairbrush, but with him it had been a dog whip, and he was a frail sort of fellow, you know. At all events, these scraps of gossip reached me from time to time over the next few years. In that time I was out of England a good deal, as will be set down in another packet of my memoirs if I'm spared to write them. My doings in the middle 40s of the century don't fit in with my present tale, though, so I pass them over for the moment, and come to the events to which my meeting with Lola and Otto Bismarck was the prelude.